Robin Daly, and this is the Yes to Life show, where we look at cancer from all angles with a view to finding what's working and why. It's called the Yes to Life show because I'm the founder and the chairman of the UK charity Yes to Life. And if you want to find out more about what we do, take a look at our website, which is yestolife.org.uk. That's yestolife.org.uk. So, for this week's show, I want you to consider for a moment the possibility that there could be tried and tested, relatively very safe drugs, many of them approved way back in the 20th century, that could have a dramatic effect on the course of cancer. And by that I mean all cancers. And that this potential has been known about for a very long time, but has received pretty much zero interest from the scientific and medical community, who've meanwhile been eagerly pursuing a cure for cancer with almost unlimited resources. In this week's programme, I shall be talking to Jane McClelland about this extraordinary state of affairs. Jane's a trained physiotherapist, but she's not a doctor or a scientist. But then she does have personal experience of what we can call repurposed drugs, and she's absolutely passionate about spreading the word regarding their potential for helping people with cancer. Hi Jane, thanks for agreeing to be on the show and to talk about your experience with repurposed drugs. So I believe that you would say that having been diagnosed 21 years ago with stage 3 cervical cancer, an absolutely key reason you're still here now and looking so healthy has been the use of repurposed drugs, these cheap off-patent drugs that were made for another condition.
Well, actually, the cancer progressed to stage 4, and it was only because it progressed that I really started looking quite actively at all sorts of different options. My background being a physiotherapist, I had some kind of medical training, but I didn't really know enough about oncology, and I'd been quite lax about looking at alternatives because I was really relying on just the medical profession to get me better. I sort of was in the system and I felt I should trust it.
Right. But found you were going in the wrong direction.
Unfortunately, my cancer had progressed. I lost trust in the doctors who would let me down, and they'd let my mother down because she died of breast cancer only a couple of years before I then had the advanced cancer. And it was when she was diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer that I started discovering all about these other alternatives. But I didn't discover about the drugs until I was then diagnosed. It had spread to my lungs. Then I really had to research as much as I possibly could.
Yeah, you knew you were up against it. Mm. So what did you come across? How did you come across it? And what did you find out about these repurposed drugs, as we're calling them?
Well, it was a long time ago. I was struggling, really, with trying to find information on the internet. And I had been told about the NutriCentre, which is a fantastic resource for both books and also for supplements and magazines and things. And I'd been there. I'd spent several afternoons just sitting there reading. And I came across a couple of magazines that really caught my interest. They didn't leap out at me to start with, but one of them was Life Extension. The other one was the Townsend Letter. And also I was looking at Icon. And there were quite a few magazines that sort of were alternative medicine. I was literally reading everything. I was going through survivor stories just to see what other people had done. And I was pretty much doing everything because right. I knew that my chance of survival was 3% for 5 years and wow. 0 for 10 years. So I knew yeah. it was really, I just had to do something pretty drastic. So I was adding all sorts of things in. And it was reading the Life Extension magazine that I discovered about the connection with lovastatin, particularly with, at the time, cervical cancer and head and neck cancers. Mm-hmm. And they had seen some research that showed that if you add a couple of these drugs together, although they have weak effects on their own, if you add them with another drug, You actually augment the effect by, when in fact with the statin and the lodine, which is an anti-inflammatory, it augmented the effect 5 times. So they may have had sort of, the statin on its own would have had an effect of 2, and then you add the lodine, which has an effect of 2, instead of making 4, you multiply that by 5 and you get a sort of a factor of 20. So you're actually really having a massive effect on the cancer rather than just a tiny effect if you add 2 rather than just 1. And the whole approach now is to add combinations of drugs. So it's not just one drug on its own. It won't have enough effect. It's actually adding several things together, which really makes a difference.
We'll come back to that. I mean, that's very much the story of integrative medicine as a whole anyway.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Yeah, we'll come back to that later on. Okay, so let's just have a look now then at some of the drugs we're talking about here. What are they? What are they normally used for? And let's have a little roundup.
Okay, the drugs that I personally used, one was the first one I used, and I got a complementary doctor, Dr. Calibou, to prescribe to me, was one called dipridamol, Persantin is its other name, which is rarely used nowadays. I think it was an alternative to aspirin, but it's more of an antiplatelet drug. So the way that that works is that it stops the metastases actually latching on to in the blood vessels, so that you actually form a new cancer. And I'd seen this was in the Townsend letter.
Can we just go back over that a second? Let's get the hard words right there. So we're talking about the spread of cancer, which is what metastases are, secondaries.
Yes.
And so this is something that inhibits the formation of secondaries elsewhere in the body. Yeah?
Exactly. So it's effectively putting the brakes on the cancer so it doesn't spread any further.
And secondaries, of course, are the thing that kill people, really.
Yes, because as soon as they get to vital organs like the brain, the lungs or the liver, those are the areas that will kill you.
Yeah, okay, on.
Yes, so that was number one. Mm-hmm. And actually I started taking that before I had my key. I discovered that quite early on. Mm-hmm. And I'd gone to Dr. Calibou, who'd said, oh, this drug was researched back in the 1980s, and I've never prescribed it, and I thought it would probably end up in the dustbin, as it has. I don't think anybody has really prescribed it. So he said, but I'm happy to give it to you. So he wrote me out a prescription, and I started taking that. And what I didn't know, in fact, the scientists didn't know about the drug at the time, was that it augments the effect of the chemotherapy quite significantly. Mm. So I took it. It was more by luck, really.
Sounds like it, yes.
I took it just before I started the chemo, and in fact my first chemotherapy dropped my markers from being sky high down to a normal level, and my oncologist was completely gobsmacked by this, couldn't understand it at all. She was so excited. She phoned me up, and I was down in West Sussex doing a sort of a painting course, trying to sort of get my head straight, and down in West Dean, it was beautiful, and she was so excited. And then after my chemo, and I had way too much chemo, and frankly I regret going through as much chemotherapy as I did. I have doctors in my family. It was quite hard to persuade them that I really wanted to stop, and I was being persuaded to keep going, and it's not their fault, you know, that's unfortunately the way things are. After 3 months, and I had 6 months of it, and I really did not want any more. Anyway, after the chemo, because I was still researching all through this time, I then came across this article in the Life Extension magazine about lovastatin and lodine, the combination. I was still taking a bit of dipridamol, so I was doing that, and then I added the statin, which is normally used for lowering cholesterol, and lodine is normally prescribed for people with very bad arthritis. It's an anti-inflammatory, a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory.
So this is a bit like ibuprofen.
Yes, yeah? And unfortunately has very bad effects on the gut.
Right.
I did actually probably wreck my gut at the time, and had I realised, I probably would have, again, have to add another, you know, omeprazole, which is just helps your stomach as well. So I did, and I was on quite a high dose of the statin. I was taking that twice a day, and I was taking the Lodine twice a day. And that dropped my markers down. When I was keeping track of everything I did. My husband's quite retentive about these things, and he was tracking my marker levels all the way through. So we knew exactly what was going on when, because it did relate very closely to what I was taking, what I was doing, which is great, because so I could actually have some feedback on what I was doing. And as soon as I added the statin and the Lodine combination, my markers dropped to 40. Now, normal levels is 150. So anybody below 150 is deemed as sort of being in a normal level. That's the normal parameter for the squamous cell carcinoma marker, which is what you get for, which is a sort of a cervical cancer marker. So mine had dropped down to 40, which was way below normal levels. So this was extraordinary given my circumstances of having stage four, four cancer. So that to me sort of made me realise that that was an incredibly useful combination that I'd just given myself. And since then, I have discovered other things, because I've been helping other people with cancer. I have friends who come with advanced cancers, and I look into it for them as well. And I've since discovered, about 6 years ago, I discovered about metformin, and that is a diabetic drug, which is used to lower glucose in the blood. And to me, this made enormous sense, because it was something that complementary therapists have always said. And
absolutely.
So that, you know, lowering your, and I was obsessive about my diet all the way through this. I was also obsessive about keeping my sugar levels really low.
Yes.
And to the point of, I cut out wheat and I cut out potatoes. I didn't have any of those all the way through. I was very strict. I did have carrot juices, so I was having some root vegetables, but essentially I cut most of starchy foods out of my diet. I would deem myself to be pretty obsessive about it.
Right.
And metformin seemed to be having this kind of glucose lowering effect without having to be as obsessive. But maybe you could be obsessive alongside the metformin. Maybe that would augment it even more. I don't know. These are the sort of things that are going to be discovered.
There's many unknowns, aren't there? Yes. Well, it's interesting. So maybe we can just talk a bit now about, you know, this was some time ago, and there has been some interest in these drugs, and you know, an understanding of their uses has spread somewhat. Which nowadays are the most, shall we say, popular repurposed drugs that people are using for cancer?
Metformin seems to scream out as the way up the list.
Yeah.
But on its own, it won't do enough, because cancer will get round. It will start to use, because it's its fuel. If you can imagine the cancer cell being replicating quickly, needs to have a lot of energy in order to do it, which is why it has a lot of glucose receptors on its surface. So it's saying, give me sugar all the time.
Yeah.
And it's wanting to replicate quickly. Now, if that glucose is depleted, it's a bit like an engine running on petrol. It won't run if it's deprived of its fuel.
Sure.
But then the cancer then starts to use lipids, and this is where the statin drug comes in. So the combination of the two is incredibly powerful, because you have the metformin stopping it from using the glucose. And where that falls short, and when the cancer starts to try and continue by using lipids, then you have the statin actually preventing it from because it needs it for making new cell walls and things like that. Mm. So that's where the lipids come in. And to deprive it of both areas of energy is where you can actually completely stop it dead. And this will actually, it will go to the stem cells. We're not just talking about getting the larger amount of cancer. We're talking about the root of the problem. It will actually get to the stem cells right at the heart of the cancer as well.
Well, that's something that's you know, been highlighted in quite a few news items and everything recently, isn't it? Is the fact that many of the treatments will reduce cancer considerably, but still won't really affect the stem cells, which are kind of the heart of the problem, if you like. Mm-hmm. And so following treatment, the whole thing starts up again.
And, exactly. You know, and that's where chemotherapy really falls short, because it reduces the volume, the actual size of the tumour, but it doesn't really get to the stem cells, which is the root mechanism.
Yeah, that's very important. The other thing that's important in what you said is that similarly, chemotherapy or many orthodox therapies have a single approach, a single target that they're pointing at. And as such, as you pointed out, cancer has this way of getting around any single target, in fact, pretty much, doesn't it? And that includes the very latest, most expensive targeted gene therapies, you know.
Exactly.
They also work great for a short period, but eventually the cancer says, okay, this is not going to work, we'll go around the side here and do this instead.
Yeah.
And so the whole need to actually target cancer in more than one way is just, that seems very apparent, and is the very, if you like, is the basis of integrative medicine, which is like you look at every possible route that you can find to target it.
Yes. Well, the if you look at a cancer cell, and any cell in the body, the driving energy source is the mitochondria, which, if you can remember back to your biology lesson, is this sort of very odd-shaped little thing inside your cell, which in fact looks like a bacteria, because that is where it was originally, that is exactly what it was. If you look back in evolution, it was a bacteria that got incorporated into the cytoplasm, you know, so that it, and it will replicate, a cancer cell will actually go back to almost prehistoric levels and be replicating like bacteria. So it's very fast producing.
Yes.
And this is where it will mutate so quickly, and it will try and outrun any treatment that you give it. So it's a bit like travelling on the tube to get to Victoria. If you can't get there one route, it will actually find another way to get there from another route.
Yes, it's a massive force, isn't it?
The
scientist Paul Davis has been pointing recently to this the thing he noticed about cancer when he was looking at, he was asked to look at it afresh from a non-cancer perspective, and the thing he noticed was, well, it's seen to be a kind of aberration of thought, but actually it works incredibly well. It's almost like, well, it doesn't look unintentional, cancer. It looks like it was a proper process that was meant to do something. And of course, as you say, it's exactly like early you know, bacteria and things like that. And in fact, it just works. It multiplies just
like
it should.
It does. But we weren't ever meant to run on glucose. We were always meant to, we evolved in Paleolithic times. We evolved to run on fats and protein predominantly, and we only swapped in the Neolithic period to survive more on starchy foods when we learned to grow wheat and grains. And then it completely changed the way our metabolism worked. So we were running more on this emergency generator rather than the main generator. And this has affected the way that we metabolize our food.
Okay, back to the drugs again. You were telling us the kind of main, most popular ones are being used. Any more you can add to that?
Cimetidine is something I also took later on after I had got through the initial part of the cancer, and I was then deemed to be clear, literally. 6 months later, then you know, it was totally gone.
That's pretty amazing. Is it from stage four?
Yeah,
6 months. That's
well, you must have been. Actually, you know, I suppose heaven. you could say I've been clear pretty much after about a month, because the chemo had worked so effectively. So you know, and I did have surgery to take the. So I'm missing about a third of my lung on the right, but I. You know, I would say I have been clear pretty much since the first dose of chemo because of the dipridamole. But then, you know, probably not completely. Yeah. I mean, you know, but the statin and the loading combination. But if I'd known about metformin at the time and taken statin and metformin, because people who have, they've noticed long-term studies that if you take a combination of statin and metformin over a long period, your risk of having cancer is reduced by a massive amount. And these are like 80%. And these are people who are diabetic, so they've got poor glucose mechanisms anyway.
These are people actually more at risk of cancer.
They are a third more at risk of having cancer. And people who take statins as well. So, you know, they have high cholesterol. Again, they probably had sort of worse diets, etc. Or maybe they're more prone to all sorts of problems as well. So we're talking about the least healthy people in the population having an 80% reduced risk of cancer, which sort of flags up as a sort of a huge...
A huge... Michael, what?
Yeah.
Look here. Isn't this interesting? I know. But it's, of course, it hasn't really attracted much attention, has it? We'll go into why not later, right? Okay. Anything else to add to the main front runners?
So we've got four really good drugs that seem to be the top performers at the moment, and they all work from a metabolic point of view. So they're not running on, they're not working on the way that the cancer replicates. They're talking about the way that it runs on the fuel, the glucose, the way it takes up the energy. And this is the top performers all worked on this, what's known as the metabolic theory, rather than the genetic theory. The genetic theory is the way it replicates, so that it's a rapid turnover from the genes replicating themselves. But this is actually stopping the fuel going in. The metabolic theory is the way that the fuel is taken in and used. So all the top four drugs that were used, that are being currently used in a trial, are looking at the metabolic theory, because these came out on top. And we've got, out of those drugs, we've got mebendazole, and we've got an antibiotic called doxycycline. If I just go back to the mebendazole, that's an antiparasitic, which is used even with children who have worms. So it's a very safe drug. And the doxycycline is an antibiotic, and this has cell killing properties. They noticed that, and then they realized that it also worked on the way that the cells metabolize energy. And then you've got the other two, which we've mentioned previously, which is the metformin and certain statins. Some of them work more effectively than others.
Okay, so this is a very important point you just made, which is that on the face of it, these are kind of completely random old drugs, you know, being used for completely different things.
Yeah.
They don't seem to be anything whatsoever to do with cancer. And to try to make sense of them in terms of current theory of cancer, which says it's all to do with the genes, is difficult, if not completely impossible. But if we look back to an earlier theory of cancer, which is the metabolic theory of cancer, that it's fundamentally got one cause, which is that the metabolism has gone wrong, then these start to make sense.
They totally fall into place.
They come under one umbrella then.
They complement each other by attacking in slightly different ways, and they don't just work on the way that the glucose is taken up. The way to stop cancer is at number one, starve it of cancer, of glucose. And number two is to inhibit the growth factors. Well, it does that as well.
Yeah.
Your body is then, number three, is sort of protecting itself with the, it has immunity issues. So you have a breakdown of your own immunity, and the cancer actually has its own way of making your body think that it is you and that it's not a foreign thing that needs to be killed. But this is actually making your body recognize it again. So it's sort of allowing your body to attack the cancer by breaking down these. You have macrophages, which are part of your white blood.
Yeah, part of your immune defense.
And these shroud the cancer. These white cells of your own, and actually make it quite hard for your body to recognize that's what's going on. And then number four is to provide oxygen, because the cells, a cancer actually prefers to live in a hypoxic situation, which is where you have areas that don't have any oxygen, and it tends to thrive much better when you don't have the oxygen able to permeate and get to it.
Mm. So interestingly enough, all those things you've talked about, of course, are targets for integrative medicine anyway. This is what people
exactly.
are trying to do with diet, with the oxygen therapies,
yes.
with the reduction of sugar, all that kind of thing.
Yes.
But these drugs happen to support
They target them in different ways.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's...
All right. So let's just talk a little bit about, well, the one thing about most integrative approaches is they don't tend to have any downsides to them. They're all plus, you know. If you go and you have a good diet, it's not going to do anything bad, all right? It only does good things to you. Drugs have always got side effects.
Yes.
They're always foreign substances. There's always some kind of negative effect. And the question is always, well, is it worth it? How great is the negative effect compared to the helpful effect? So looking at these, how do they rank in that way?
These are derived, and some of them have come directly from natural substances anyway. In fact, metformin, I think, derived from French lavender, and it is very similar in its effects to berberine, which is an alkaloid substance. And berberine is a particularly good, and it hasn't really been explored properly by the complementary therapies. I mean, berberine is fantastic as another alternative if people wanted to go down the natural side. But metformin is very low in toxicity. It's been used for decades. It does have some problems with the gut. You might get a little bit of diarrhea or a bit of tummy upset, but it's very, very mild. And statins, lovastatin, which I use, actually came from red yeast rice, which is something that the Asians take a lot of. So again, it was a natural substance that got turned into a drug, and then it was, and people didn't realize quite how it worked to lower cholesterol. They just knew it did. The scientists at that time had no clue, and then after that they developed these other statins, and they became more potent, more powerful, with more side effects. Lovastatin, which was the first one, has very minor side effects, but all statins can cause a bit of muscle pain, and that's because it's depleting the lipids and the sort of the and that's what you unfortunately need to get that effect with cancer. If you're lowering your blood cholesterol, totally different, has a completely different effect on that. And in fact, how it does that is I don't know whether they know how that works specifically yet either, but the whole statin research has been a complete debacle anyway.
Absolutely. They're not doing too well on the credibility stakes when it comes to being really good for heart attacks.
Yeah.
Okay. On the face of it, this looks like, well, you don't have to bother with all that integrative stuff and diets and all the rest of it. Just take the pills, you know, and get fixed. Yeah, that it kind of appeals to the pill for all ills, we can fix you mentality. But I think there is a danger of that. But actually, in terms of actually achieving a cure or a lasting remission, of course, there is this point that I was making, is that the integrative programs don't just deplete the cancer. They also do something to you as well in a positive way, which has to do with why you got cancer in the first place.
Yeah.
And so I would say that integrative medicine still has a huge amount to offer alongside this. So maybe your own experience.
I'm now an ambassador for a clinic in Harley Street called the Care Oncology Clinic.
Okay.
And they are doing exactly that. They are doing this trial using these four drugs, the metformin, the statin, mebendazole, and the antibiotic doxycycline.
So just to be clear, this is an opportunity for people to try this protocol supervised by proper oncologists and everything safely. And it's a way that they can actually engage in this. You know, this is definitely not DIY therapy.
No.
Obviously, these are all drugs that have to be prescribed anyway. But this is specifically targeted at cancer by oncologists and scientists who are interested in cancer.
Yes.
And therefore, a specialist trial. And we will include details of that on our website afterwards. So
yes.
Carry on, yes.
Yeah. So this is a big study that's being done, and this is going to be looking at the number of patients. They're trying to get as many patients as they possibly can, up to maybe 5,000, in order to show with the sort of the studies that this metabolic theory, the way that the glucose is taken up, is actually going to affect the outcomes. And they work very much by encouraging the patient to cut out sugar as well in their diet. So they're not just saying take these pills, they're actually asking people to cut out sugar and high glycemic foods out of their diet. So it's working very much in more of this integrative way. And they are very open to people saying that they're doing all these other alternatives as well. Most people will lie when they go to their oncologist. They Absolutely. Won't say what they're doing yeah. as well. They'll yeah. just say, oh, yes, well, I might have tried doing a bit of oxygen therapy. They may have been to some hyperbaric oxygen therapy, or they may, you know, they will maybe mention, and I did the same. I only mentioned a couple of things that I was doing. I didn't even tell my oncologist I was taking the dipyridamole, which was a bit silly because it's a drug. I talked to Dr. Calibou about it, and he seemed to think it was absolutely fine. It's not like I did it completely without any medical supervision.
Right.
I did do it with medical supervision, but I kept a lot of things quiet from my oncologist, and I didn't tell her about the diet and everything else that I was doing. I was taking an awful lot of supplements as well. But this is you know, the whole point is that it's a combination of things. And if you really want to maximise your chances of overcoming what will be a life or death situation, you can't just rely on the pills, particularly if your cancer has got advanced, like it was in my case. You know, I had 0% chance of surviving 10 years. So it was a case of throw everything at it or just rely on the medics. And I knew just relying on the medical profession had let me down before. I had been misdiagnosed from a very early stage, and, you know, it had spread far more and been allowed to progress to a point where, you know, it was terminal.
Okay, fair enough. So what you're saying is that the oncologists on this trial are interested in the whole program that people are taking
yes,
on, so
absolutely.
They can actually include that in the information of the trial.
Yes,
fantastic.
Exactly. So they are encouraging people to say that they're on cannabis oil, or they're, you know, they're doing all these other alternative therapies as well.
Okay, so maybe a little bit more about say the importance, if you like, of the non-drug interventions, not just from the point of view of, like, as you point out, you obviously want to do everything you can, because you know, the cancer,
well, you don't know what's going to work.
Exactly.
You really
don't know what's going to work, so you do everything you can.
Yeah.
But I just want to go back to this point about the fact that orthodox medicine makes no attempt to look at the problem you had that gave you cancer in the first place. It doesn't go back there and say, oh, well, actually what went wrong was you were doing this, unless it's smoking.
Yeah.
Or you got exposed to asbestos.
Yeah.
That's about it, really, isn't it? I mean, you know, it's like, if somebody was grossly overweight, they might say to them, look, you've got to shape up a bit, you know. But there's not really any kind of attempt to look at what went wrong in their lifestyle. What were the factors that led to them actually getting cancer, and to do something about putting them right? Now, that's definitely not the case with integrative medicine.
No, no. And in fact, what they've discovered is that it all stems from, there seems to be an infection that underlies every single cancer. So that's where the antibiotic will also help, and it helps to overcome that problem. In my case, I had a virus, so I had the HPV. And they did try a dendritic vaccine as well. They did a trial of 14 patients, and I was the only one with a tiny response. It wasn't much of a response, but I did have a tiny response. But that was after I'd had intravenous vitamin C. So I tried to reboot my immune system. This was after all my chemo, which had completely destroyed my immune system.
Yes.
So I rebooted myself with the intravenous vitamin C for about 3 weeks. I had it about two or three times a week for 3 weeks. And then I was also, and what is vital with your immune system is actually your gut. That is the...
It destroys it.
Yes. Yeah. Well, chemo, for number one, destroys it. But it is the main area. About 70 or 80% of your immune system is based in your gut. Mm. And this actually seems to be the root of cancer, is actually not having a good diet and allowing pathogens to get through your gut wall, and not having the integrity of a proper gut wall, which is caused by a lack of the right bacteria. Mm. You have a balance of your good bacteria and your bad bacteria in your gut, and if that balance shifts to the bad bacteria, I mean, you need a certain amount of leakiness in your gut to allow things to get through, but the integrity of the gut and its ability to work on the enzymes, and we have so many bacteria in our bodies all over us, and in particular in the gut, that are vital for our health, and we neglect these at our cost. And the Western diet is totally shocking and completely destroys our ability to maintain a really good balance of that gut. But if you look after your gut, you're pretty much going to be looking after your total health.
Right. So and the other factor, of course, to combine with the poor diet is the use of antibiotics that actually go off.
Yeah, I know. It's sort of like again, they're probably going to end up being the worst thing we could possibly have done for ourselves, is to destroy our gut with endless antibiotics, and particularly from a young age, you know. Yeah. There are so many children now who've been on antibiotics which would never have been the case.
It's the first thing that happens.
Yeah, and it's totally, you know, and I think this has an awful lot to do with an imbalance of, you have two sides of your immune system. You have your allergy type immune system, and you have your more virus and bacteria killing sort of immune system. Mm-hmm. And once you sort of work on one, you're sort of depleting the other one. So if you're giving vaccines and antibiotics, and you're sort of, you swap the, your balance in your gut doesn't quite know where it is, and you can actually totally destroy your innate immune system by messing around with it.
So this is where judicious use of these things comes in, and of course, you know, integrative medicine always seeks that if you use something which is harmful in some way, you do that in a clever way, which means you use it as little as you can get away with.
Yep.
Which means you augment the way that it operates if you can.
Yeah.
And then you simultaneously do something to right the damage, or to protect yourself from the damage.
Yeah, there's no point taking probiotics if you're taking an antibiotic. And in fact, they say don't take a probiotic if you're on the care oncology protocol.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you take the mebendazole and the doxycycline are alternated. They're sort of 3 weeks on one and then 3 weeks on the other, alongside the metformin and the statin. But whilst you are taking the antibiotic on that sort of 3 week period, there's no point taking the probiotic, because you want the doxycycline to be working on the cancer. Yes. Yes. And not on the bacteria that you're putting in your body. So and it's the same with CoQ10. You don't want to be taking CoQ10 at the same time as you're taking the statin, because that'll actually stop it from working. Yeah. So there are certain things that you need
to
do. But repopulating your gut is absolutely crucial with the right probiotics, and that is totally crucial. And most people waste their time with probiotics because they're then pouring this bad diet into themselves, and actually it's not allowing the bacteria that you just put in to actually colonize your gut and to multiply. So most of us are wasting our time by putting probiotics into our bodies.
Okay, so just want to look at things from another side a little bit. I mean, obviously, your programs was quite unusual at the time, in as much as
it's sort of like a third route. You've got this normal, totally conventional therapy, which is the sort of the surgery, the chemo, radiotherapy, and then you've got the complementary side, which tends to be very natural, and doesn't tend to incorporate drugs at all. In fact, drugs are a sort of a complete no-no. But being a physio, I was not totally against drugs. I've always been cautious about them. But having seen, you know, I see that drugs work. And chemotherapy does reduce the volume of your tumour. But unfortunately, it reduces your immune system at the same time. And certainly for terminal or advanced cancer, high-dose chemo is, I would say, a complete no-no. Low-dose chemo, possibly. But this third route that I took, which involved taking the drugs, was totally different. And looking at this metabolic route, I think this is going, I strongly believe this is going to be a way of getting the conventional and the complementary side to start talking to each other. Because at the moment, there seems to be sort of almost open hostility between both sides.
They're actually based on completely different
theories. Totally different theories.
It's like they talk different languages, you know, one's based on genetic theory and one's based on metabolic theory. And that is a divide that isn't crossed off.
Yes, but this is sort of like almost a bridge between the two, so that you're actually talking to doctors on their level, which is saying you can give people a drug because they don't trust the complementary side. No. They have a huge amount of distrust over what goes on there.
But it doesn't fit their theory anyway.
No, well, they've never been taught about the value of a good diet. As medical students, I think they get something like an afternoon or something on nutrition. It's tiny.
Yeah.
And so therefore, they don't get to have any kind of knowledge about the way that the actual essential part, which is really what you put into your body, is what helps you run and tick over and is vital for your health.
Yeah. So, as I say, I wanted to look at it slightly from the other side. And this is to say that, you know, at Yes Life, we see people come to us with all sorts of conditions, and they take all sorts of different approaches. We're not trying to tell anybody what to do. We're supporting them in finding out what they want to do and helping them to do it. And some people are doing largely orthodox medicine with a little bit of something else. Some people might be doing a very alternative route, you know, and maybe don't want to go anywhere near orthodox medicine. And then there are all shades in between. Most people are somewhere in the middle there, frankly. They're doing orthodox medicine, picking and choosing in their orthodox medicine. They maybe do this, but they decide not to do that. And then they're doing a whole load of other stuff as well.
That's if they're given the choice. But oncologists can be quite scary people.
They can be very scary.
And they can bully and frighten people into doing things that they don't want to do.
Yeah. But nonetheless, the thing I wanted to talk about was the fact that the people often who are very alternative, if you like, they don't necessarily seem to do so well. They might do well for quite a period. But it seems like at a certain point, many of them need what you would consider a very orthodox cell kill.
Yeah.
They've got a condition which is too inflammatory or too, they've got too much energy behind it, the cancer has, for the alternative approaches to actually contain it.
Exactly.
And that might be after a period of time, or it might be because they only come to the whole thing at quite a late stage.
Well, that's the problem, is that cancers are all very different. Some people catch their cancers early.
Yeah.
Other people can, you know, be diagnosed with terminal cancer and they had no idea
exactly that
they had it until, you know,
and
a couple
of
weeks
before. And of course, some cancers are much more virulent than others as well. So there's lots of factors, but it does seem to be the case that you know, orthodox medicine, one thing it can do is kill cancer cells, you know, it's quite good at that. You know, and it can slow the whole thing down quite a lot. It's a bit like a fire extinguisher putting out a bit of a fire, you know.
Yeah. Well, the problem is that all these old drugs, you see, have gone off patent and they're not being investigated anymore. And if you look at the epidemiological studies, in other words, the way that the population has reacted to these drugs, and then look at the statistics of who's getting cancer and what drugs they've used, then that is why these it has become more glaringly obvious.
It's not from research, really. It's just come out of
use. And I mean, unfortunately, the research is not being done. And because trials are really set up by big pharmaceutical companies who have, and these randomised clinical trials, which are sort of like the gold standard, cost a fortune to set up and to run. They take years, you know, between 5 and 10 years to actually complete them properly. So it's very biased towards the pharmaceutical companies because they will only run trials on drugs that they are trying to promote. So unfortunately, drugs, you know, and particularly combinations of these drugs are not being done because clearly it's the combinations that work effectively. It's not just one drug on its own. No. And metformin has been, it's being trialled at the moment with doxorubicin, which is a chemotherapy drug, but they're not trialling it with anything else. But they are getting far better effects by combination drugs. Right. They're even now combining chemotherapy and radiotherapy together, which is getting much better results. So that's good. And then they've started recently, there was all this stuff in the press about two immunotherapy drugs being used together. And produces better results. Right. It's so all about combinations. The rule is combining things. And if you look at serious diseases that have been overcome with combinations, you're looking at HIV is now completely controlled. You can live a totally natural lifespan using a combination of four drugs. A doctor would never now give somebody with HIV just one of those drugs. It doesn't work on its own. You need to give all four. Same with TB. You give all four drugs and you can overcome it. But if you just give one thing, it doesn't work. And cancer should be no different. It should be no different. It needs a target. It's a bit like, I mean, I have my sons here have something called a pop-up pirate. Okay, and you have to stick these things in. Eventually, you stick these things into the side and the pirate will pop out. And some people will be sort of putting in a couple of things and the pirate will pop out. And then, you know, other people will have to put loads of things in and the pirate will pop out. And that's what you do with cancer. You need lots of approaches in order to achieve the result. But some people will need more and other people will need less.
Yeah,
that's a very visual thing for a radio show. I'd love to demonstrate that on TV or do some sort of, you know, and actually show people and demonstrate. That's what you need to do.
Okay, great. So, but very key point you've made there about the whole arena, is, of course, is to note that, of course, business has a different target to us.
Unfortunately.
In terms of their target isn't essentially health. Health is secondary to making a profit.
Making the buck.
They have no interest in something that happens to work well if it doesn't make a profit. So the funding for something like this has to come from somewhere else.
Yes.
I mean, it's great there is a trial being run.
Yes, but they don't have huge funds.
They don't have huge funds.
And they want to run this trial up and down the country and have more clinics to do this. And I have been to Westminster to discuss this with an MP and he was going to raise it in the House. He was going to discuss all things. I don't think anything's happened about that at all. So I'm going to have to keep pushing because I just feel that
well, this is what we should be able to depend on our governments for, is to actually, you know, deliver health solutions.
Yes, and just talking to your doctor, unfortunately, you know, the oncologists don't have the training or the mindset to think about these things in an innovative way. They have their hands tied by various protocols, so they can't look at doing anything different because they're worried about being sued. And they don't have the time, frankly, to monitor these things. So it's very hard. But if a patient will actually make the noise and say, I need to be doing this, and people will only find out by going onto the internet and discussions from different sites. And, you know, and there are some very good sites out there. You've got Cancer Active, you've got Cancer You Can on Facebook. I've now set up my own Facebook page, Jane McClelland, Cancer Thriver and Survivor. I might actually change it to Jane Dory McClelland because there's another Jane McClelland out there who's had cervical cancer as well. So, and she's pushing the HPV vaccine, which I have some reservations about. I'd like to separate myself from her.
Differentiate yourself there.
Yes.
But anyway, great. Well, we'll share all those details. I think we're pretty much out of time. It's been really interesting to find out more about these drugs and you know, just what a potential sort of gold mine, if you like, is there. And it's so great to hear that
really
somebody
feel
is
it's
looking,
the answer.
Yeah, some it's so great to hear that people are actually taking it seriously now at last. So, you know, it's been a real pleasure to talk to you. And I really hope that, you know, sharing your experience and your understanding of the whole situation will be of help and interest to the people who are listening. So thanks very much indeed.
Fantastic. Thanks, Robin.
Well, that's all for this week's show. Do visit yestolife.org.uk, yestolife.org.uk, and click the link to radio on the left-hand sidebar to find details of all the resources mentioned during the show. We'd always love to hear from you, what you think about the show, any suggestions for future shows. Just email me at radio@yestolife.org.uk. And do check out the Yes to Life section of the UK Health Radio's online Health Triangle magazine. Next week's show is a little different in that I'm going to be broadcasting a Yes to Life event that's taking place on a farm in Sussex. Thanks very much for listening. Goodbye.